Hello and welcome. Today we're talking about monitoring and observability. I'm David Bond.
And I'm Robert Limbury.
Are you now?
I was this morning when I woke up.
I've been looking forward to this one. I have been working with monitoring since my first job at BT Research Labs in Ipswich, where part of my job was monitoring dial IP networks. And we had these things called pop testers, which would make multiple calls into the system, get an IP address, get on the internet, download some content, upload some content, and then disconnect the call. I learned so much from that about making sure that the service behaves as it should, and when it doesn't, raising the alarm. How about you, Rob? What's your first experience of monitoring?
My first job was developing avionics systems in the Defence Research Labs, and you'd run PS commands and top commands on your server to see what was running. Why is my Unix box running slow? What's going on? Has somebody started a process that you know they shouldn't have started?
Was it fairly manual, or did you start to automate? How did that work in those days?
It was more in the development. You know, in developing something, things go wrong, and you want to know when they've gone wrong.
But how do you respond when it does? And I think that's the heart of what we're talking about today, monitoring and observability. Is observability just a modern marketing word for the same thing?
Observability is a lot more trying to get inside a problem. We've been talking in the context of applications, trying to understand not just what's gone wrong, but look inside and say, why has it gone wrong? But I think the same thing holds true across all the different domains of observability.
I think it's good that we're coming at this from two different angles. You're coming at it perhaps from the application developer's perspective, and I'm coming at it from the networking perspective. Monitoring is more about checking to see if the system is healthy. Observability goes deeper. It's looking inside a system or looking inside a network and asking, why is the system behaving this way?
Monitoring has often left more questions open. Observability then helps answer those questions. So monitoring, for example, my website's gone down and it's failing to respond to ping now. Observability would drill into it and say, well, it's because you've lost your local router, or some other component's gone down, or actually the server's gone down, or it's somebody else's fault.
From a managed service provider's perspective then, why is observability so important?
As a managed service provider, you're going to have responsibilities and service level agreements to make sure that a service or a system is operational and working within acceptable performance boundaries. Not only do you need to know when it's gone wrong, but you need to know how to fix it. And it's all about that mean time to repair. Observability, going deeper into that data to let you know that it's a particular component that's failed or maybe you're being hacked, is going to allow you to respond to what's going on much more quickly.
I agree that the depth that you get with observability is really important, but we mustn't miss that some services are still, even when provided by managed service providers, not monitored. We still see contracts that a managed service provider has with the customer not even aligning to the monitoring. Monitoring first, and then observability. Observability gives you more depth, but let's not miss the basics. That which you are selling must be monitored as a starting point.
And those contractual obligations can cause you real problems commercially. So in order to have a profitable relationship, you need to be able to provide that level of service assurance that you can only get from monitoring.
Let's look at the basic reason that a customer would come to a managed service provider in the first place. Two things that the customer couldn't do themselves: the quality of the service that results should be higher. And then, of course, the cost should be lower than the customer providing the same expertise in-house. How do monitoring and observability fit into that expertise that the MSP brings?
In many ways, they become unique selling points. Knowing how to configure these monitoring systems, you want to bring a team the know-how, the capability, and the expertise to be able to operate that environment properly.
So let's say the customer has come to you as a managed service provider. They've got some WAN, multiple offices, some on-premise compute, and let's say they're a Microsoft Azure customer and they're using Office 365. How does the managed service provider, when consulting with such a customer, decide what it is that needs monitoring and, of course, therefore, what goes into the service contract?
The obvious consulting answer is it depends. You've got the basic level of infrastructure monitoring, and this is where most managed service providers are today. Managed networks, managed infrastructure, managed cloud, managed platforms, perhaps even managed databases. For me, there are three different layers to observability. You've got an infrastructure layer. As a managed service provider, that's typically what your service wrap will be around. On top of that, you've got the application layer. And the applications are complicated things. You might want to understand errors that have happened, particularly something that's gone wrong with the application. Maybe it's going slower than usual. Maybe it's not performing as you'd expect. And for me, the third layer then is the customer experience layer. How is the end user experiencing how that is maybe rendering on a browser or performing on my iPhone? These three layers are really interesting because they're all related to each other.
The customer experience part is quite new to me. We've seen a few vendors in digital experience monitoring where they'll actually put plugins in your browser and watch the experience that you're having of the applications from the user's perspective, highly useful in monitoring the true end user experience. And at the end of the day, that's the most important part.
Those interactions can be fully monitored and you can see exactly what's going on. Is it better in your experience to over-monitor or under-monitor, and how important is that to get it right?
It's very easy to say, monitor only that which you have a contractual agreement with the customer. But in reality, when there is an issue and you do have some responsibility for determining why, that's when you're glad you've got your traces, you've got your logs, and you can really start to delve into exactly what happened during the fault. The problem is, by putting in a lot of log monitoring, you are gathering phenomenal amounts of data at great expense, pushing the cost of the service up and eroding your profitability. So of course the answer is some kind of balanced approach, but only monitor that which you have expertise to interpret. And if it comes to logs that really only the application developers would be able to interpret, make that their responsibility. When you're partnering with the client, have a discussion about who would interpret particular observability information and make sure that that part of the observability stays on that side of the fence.
Log monitoring might help you find a security problem or something else that's going wrong. The challenge with logs, though, is they can be huge, right? Mm. And can result in your costs spiraling out of control.
I'm a firm believer that the people that need access to the logs are the application developers. And if you as a managed service provider aren't providing application level support, you yourself should not be looking at the logs. You might provide logging and traces as a service to your client for them to consume. So that is value you can bring as an MSP. But you have to be careful to avoid providing a service around application management if you're not involved in managing any bug fixes to that application. Now, as for costs, I think there is a tendency to overlog a production application. During development, you should overlog. You should have everything switched on at debug as the developer yourself, so that when something goes wrong, you do have that history of what went wrong. When you're in the testing and even UAT phases, keep the information level on. But in a production application, I would keep it at the warning, error, and critical levels only. I know this is controversial because then people go, well, if something goes wrong, how you should have sorted that out during QA. It's the MSP's responsibility to serve up the warnings, errors, and criticals to the developers, but really the developers should be avoiding those things happening in the first place by overlogging in previous stages of application development.
I might slightly temper your argument by saying actually looking at application logs to find who's logging on. Have I got IP addresses that I didn't expect in my system? That could be quite relevant.
That's absolutely right. Those are things that belong in an audit log. So anything security related, communications data, and that's information about traffic, maybe remote IP addresses, service use, call records, subscriber data, that kind of thing. Those things belong in a specific audit log. And that's fair. That may be at the information level. Now that we've decided what we should be monitoring, who are the key vendors out there and how do we make sensible choices?
The monitoring observability landscape is, I would say, growing in complexity every day. You need to be looking at the multi-tenant organization and setup, the ease of use, what your unique differentiators are. If you follow your vendor too closely, if you make a big strategic investment in your vendor and just deploy everything they tell you, where is that differentiated capability, which is so important?
And are we talking about one vendor or multiple vendors? Because they have specialisms, right? You might have one technology for RMM, right, monitoring and management of workstations. You may have a completely different technology for network monitoring and maybe even a separate vendor. How many vendors do we need to talk to here? How many different monitoring solutions should we bring into our stack?
Well, there's some conventional wisdom out there. Monitoring vendors will come to you with this idea you need a single pane of glass to monitor everything. The challenge with that is what you might find from a monitoring company is that they're very good at networks, but rubbish at workstations.
I must say the idea of a single vendor is compelling though, isn't it? It's one vendor to deal with. Many of these tools now have really good customer-facing dashboarding solutions and reporting solutions. We, of course, had our reporting and dashboarding episode. Give that a listen if you haven't heard that already. The idea of a single vendor is appealing, isn't it?
It can be. Yeah, it can absolutely be. And lots of people will go and choose, you know, a vendor. There are some arguments against having a single pane of glass. So I'll give you an example. If you wanted to monitor infrastructure, you'll choose an infrastructure monitoring tool, right? And so some key vendors out there would be Logic Monitor, Orvik, there's some open source. Most of those have got synthetic monitoring, the ability to monitor websites, running simple scripts to see what's going on the website. But there are also some very specific tools that help monitor websites with synthetics that are a bit more specialized. And so do you choose to build the capability on that single platform, or do you choose to bring in a more specialized tool that goes into more detail?
It will depend what it is that you should be monitoring for each customer. You do not want to be introducing five different tools to a customer that simply wants some website monitoring. So I think having a selection of observability vendors ready to go should the requirements justify it. You should aim to minimize the number of vendors because vendor management is difficult. Each of them should be chosen, of course, on price, but also on capability. There are some viable open source options in there, but these tend to come with a requirement for highly skilled operations staff.
One really important factor for me, you may well find yourself in a situation where you want or need to change your monitoring tool. It can be extremely painful. And if you're not able to do that, and if you're not prepared to do that, you're going to find yourself with vendor lock-in. It's too expensive for you to change. Your vendor knows that, and they can start taking advantage of that situation. I think always in the back of your head, be thinking about, what does it look like if I need to change?
We do see the cost going up and up. Vendors have realized how much power they have with lock-in. Change is a huge cost. And we're even seeing customers opting for infrastructure technology that has built-in monitoring that negates the need for an external monitoring system. Public cloud service providers, Azure, AWS, have spotted this. They've realized that the customer has a high cost of observability, and they are providing very reasonably priced in infrastructure solutions. At the other end of the spectrum, you look at the likes of Meraki, who have an excellent inbuilt monitoring system baked into their Meraki dashboard, including hooks into ITSM systems. This bypasses a huge expense for the managed service provider. It's a big expense for the MSP or for the enterprise. That is part of the consideration as well. When you're selecting your infrastructure partners, choose those that would reduce your cost of observability. It may introduce cost to the infrastructure, but when we're looking at monthly bills of tens of thousands of dollars for observability, it's worth it. Let's look at the vendors at each end of this scale then. You've got the application performance management tools at one end of the scale where the developers are really interested in the results. And at the other end of the scale, you've got the infrastructure monitoring tools.
Application performance monitoring tools, the big beasts that you're talking about here are the Dynatrace, the Datadogs, the New Relics of the world. Those are the bigger ones. There's a ton of smaller ones as well. There's a big movement here into OpenTelemetry, and logging, of course, here is super relevant. So, you know, anything that that looks at application logs could be Elastic in there. Splunk, maybe a bit less, but maybe Splunk is a relevant play in there as well.
So when Cisco bought Splunk, that was a big investment for them. Do you think they'll see a return on that investment?
They spent a lot of money. Often when companies make big strategic investments like that, it's not just simply looking at return on investment. It's also access to a new market, being able to access new enterprise accounts at C-level. So I think with Splunk, it's been a good tool for a long, long time. They've got an observability component and a great partner ecosystem. I think it'll follow a standard pattern, which is I think will be gradual assimilation into the business. They will continue to make profit on it. It'll probably wipe its nose. But really, it's about the strategic importance of being able to expand into the enterprise. Remember, Splunk largely enterprise applications.
Those solutions that you've mentioned, I think application developers would recognize those. And recognize that there are open source options there, which once you get into large-scale deployment, you would then substitute out for a vendor. So these are all great options for application performance management. Is that an area that you think managed service providers need to get involved in?
I've seen them steer away from it, to be honest, Dave. I've seen customers come forward with requests to be able to provide managed applications. It happens in some situations. But I've seen managed service providers steer away from that because they don't have the capability and it's not strategic for them. They don't perhaps see the market demand in growing that capability.
So at the other end of the scale then, let's have a look at the infrastructure monitoring tools, those things which might be more traditionally managed service provider tools. And I'm thinking of RMM, I'm thinking of infrastructure monitoring, and I'm thinking of cloud monitoring.
For RMM, the big players are Kaseya, SolarWinds Enable. For infrastructure, you've got a strong open source representation, I think, with Prometheus Grafana. If you know how to configure those systems, they're quite powerful. Then you've got Logic Monitor, strong on infrastructure. And we've already mentioned Datadog. Datadog grew from being an infrastructure and cloud monitoring company as well. So there is some crossover. It's not hard and fast, depending on your needs. From my experience recently, Logic Monitor is probably the platinum choice for a managed service provider in terms of all of its capability.
It's worth mentioning some other players in there as well. We've got Orvik, ManageEngine, PRTG, particularly in Europe, and of course Cisco's own offering in ThousandEyes. We see some excellent network-specific vendors, such as Intuity. What else have you seen on your radar?
Flow monitoring could be quite relevant for a managed service provider, especially if you're doing a network or a shared network. Different NetFlow vendors, Kentix appeared on my radar for that. And I'm pleased you mentioned ThousandEyes. It's a Cisco acquisition for me that makes a great deal of sense to be able to look at the performance across the networks.
It's also worth mentioning the lower cost end of the spectrum, so the likes of Pingdom, who are just doing very simplistic monitoring. As a managed service provider, you have to have at least your basics covered. And in some cases where you can't afford to invest or the customer's not willing to invest in you providing them with a complex observability solution, at least having the basics covered is really important.
Good shout.
How do managed service providers maximize the value of this observability investment?
It's an investment, all right. And I think there are two ways of looking at this. You've got an internal focus and an external focus. A great observability tool, the primary reason you're going to invest in it is to lower your mean time to repair and provide better service levels to your customer. You've got the best MTTR and a better service quality on the back of it. The external way of looking at it is then how can you monetize the data, the observability platform that you've got by providing additional insights back into your customer? your customer has got no way of knowing how to optimize their environment. They've outsourced it. They've given it to you to run. They don't know, for example, that they've over-provisioned their storage by a factor of 3. They don't know that their cloud costs are ramping up really highly in certain regions of the world. They don't know that, for example, customer experience is really poor in APAC. They don't know all of these things because the data from the observability system is yours as an MSP. You've hidden it. You're internal focused. How can I then provide my customer with more value? And either by monetizing that value, creating offerings that might be helpful, for example, a cloud cost optimization offering, or your reporting is showing observability metrics and you're surfacing that data in a way that your competition isn't.
There is phenomenal amounts of value in there that is just not surfaced to the end customer. So for any MSP that has an existing observability solution, it's worth revisiting what's in there. What additional value could you take to your customers? And ask your engineers, because they'll know that there is information in there that's not being converted into service value. One thing we haven't discussed is on producing alerts and events from your observability solution, how do you most cost effectively convert that into a rapid time to fix? And that can be about automating the integration between your observability solution and your workflow system, whether that's an ITSM or something else. It can include ensuring that you have synchronization between the assets that the observability system has discovered and your CMDB to make sure that the assets that you're monitoring are those which your customer has contracted you to manage. Quite often we find that there is over-monitoring going on with assets that aren't even included in the service management contract. And also, when you spot that there are additional assets being monitored, would you like us to monitor these things? Would you like us to provide you with insights into your database performance, for example? So there's a lot of value in the data that's being monitored or which is accessible for monitoring that the MSP can take to the customer as a value prop.
We've also seen great value in the idea of providing a data mart back to customers. So let's paint a scenario of, you know, I'm a coffee shop franchise and, you know, there's customers coming and going through my coffee shops all the time on the hotspots. To be able to analyze the profile of who's in my shop provides additional business insight to that customer to be able to optimize, for example, the number of baristas, the amount of coffee I need to order. Have I got a big enough shop? To be able to answer all of those kinds of questions, there's data hidden inside the technical metrics that can be surfaced upwards at a business level.
When looking into that which is available when monitoring Meraki networks, just out of the box, there is very high value in which clients, which MAC addresses, and therefore which vendors, so iPhones or MacBooks versus laptops or Samsung devices, are present in which stores. How many of your customers are on iPhone 11s and how many have got iPhone 16s? This is important to the marketing people, to the people who select where to place retail stores, coffee shops, etc. So there's a huge amount of value beyond simply service monitoring available in here. When you fall back onto the cellular network because the WAN has gone down, which cellular provider is providing you with the best quality of fallback? All that information is available within the Meraki data via the API. And it's no additional cost. This is all just available to the managed service provider. The other thing you can do is look to see where you can extend that service. So if you have a Meraki network, have a look at some of the new MT devices, which are monitoring air quality, humidity, sound levels, door sensors. There are some fantastic additional observability options available to you that allow you to increase the value of the service that you're providing to your end customers.
Let's try and leave our listeners with an answer to one of the key questions here, which is, how do you recommend to build a scalable observability practice?
Yeah, so scalability is, of course, where the managed service provider produces benefits to the customer. The managed service provider can do this better, to a higher quality, and at a lower cost than the customer can themselves. First, let's look at the foundation of your observability practice. Don't omit the monitoring benefit. Simple monitoring, is it up or is it down, is something which you have to get right, reliable, and at a sufficiently low cost to ensure that all of your customers are getting a really good service, are having good uptime, and are getting good mean time to fixes. So get your basics right first. And then on top of that, we're enhancing that monitoring with some true observability. When it fails, why is it failing? You invest in the right vendors, you have them all ready to go, but you don't offer them to all customers, and you standardize your tools and processes regardless of the vendor. Look at your own processes and ensure that the tools fit within those. The idea of centralized monitoring, I think, is valuable. So bringing everything into a single pane of glass for internal use has distinct value. It might be, however, that that is your ITSM. It might be ServiceNow or Autotask PSA, something that is fed by multiple monitoring systems. Quite frequently, it's your ticketing system that provides that internal single pane of glass. If you're going to expose that to the customer, do you want to surface the observability data, which might be of high value to the customer, or it may be more appropriate to simply expose the ticketing data and the alerts and incidents?
The area I'd like to double-click on is the organizational setup for scale. Build a capability, build a team that is experts in monitoring. They know how to configure dashboards, they know how to set up telemetry, they know how to integrate. And the rest of the business, if they want a dashboard writing, they come to that team. The challenge I've seen with that model is the rest of the business doesn't take advantage of or doesn't build any intimacy with the data. The alternative is you build this much smaller team whose responsibility is to keep that tool up to date, keep all the data flowing, and you then enable the rest of the business to build their own dashboards and to interface with the tool in the way that they want. The challenge with that is getting the enablement right. For a larger organization, that's the way that I would recommend to build a scalable practice. A core team who's going to keep your tool up to date, an enablement function that's going to interface with the business, act as a consultant, really. And then the third layer is that wider business team. And that could be finance, it could be security, all these different areas of the business that could stand to benefit. And for me, the middle of it is that consultant-led approach.
For observability, making sure that you don't need to over-license your observability system. For a large managed service provider, strongly implies a multi-tenanted solution, making sure that you can bring multiple customers' data into one tool. And of course, the security implications of that, and making sure that's well-managed in terms of data separation. And then building expertise within your service team to cover the various services that you offer, also really important for scalability. Those same staff members can cover multiple tenants.
With scalable observability, what would be your top tips for an organization building automation into their observability practice?
MSP should ensure that the full customer lifecycle is as automated as possible. So when you're bringing on a new customer, make sure that the process of asset discovery is automatic. If you're working with Azure, this is really simple. You just use the Graph API and you scan for everything that the customer has. When you have an unknown on-premise subnet, you might even have to go on site and scan it yourself. But whatever your process is for customer onboarding, ensure that service asset discovery is as automated as it can possibly be, particularly for ongoing maintenance. As the customers add individual databases to their database servers, as they add services to Azure, that continual process of observing that which you need to observe should be as automated as possible. I've often seen that you've got 50 devices being monitored, and the customer is asking you, well, hang on a minute, what about these other 50 over here? And the answer should not be, because you didn't tell us. You should have systems in place that automatically discover that. And of course, that brings revenue benefits as well. If you're continually discovering additional resources in the customer's infrastructure, you're charging them for monitoring them. Offboarding a customer is often overlooked. The efficiency of data deletion, even during the term of the agreement, things that the customer no longer requires to be monitored, that should be automated as much as possible as well. And then finally, as the customer leaves you, efficiently deleting old data and not making that a large cost to you, that should be automated as much as possible as well.
Good discussion today and different points of view. Dave, what would your final parting words be to our listeners?
I think get the basics right. There are so many managed service providers that aren't monitoring the things that they are contractually obliged to. Look at where that can be extended into observability and understanding when things go wrong, why they've gone wrong, but don't overspend on observability solutions that eat into your profit margins. Look to see what additional value you can provide to the customer from data that you're already collecting. Most managed service providers, if they looked under that rock, would find quite a lot of gold. When you are doing vendor selection, get some outside help. These are very expensive systems. Make sure that you don't mispurchase, because quite frequently these are multi-year agreements and it can get very expensive. Get inside help. Consult with your engineers. What do they think is of value to observe? You are providing your customer with a high quality service at a cost that is lower than the customer providing it for themselves.
Well, there's so much to observe these days, Dave. There's so much data flying around all over the place. There's more and more to observe, so I think this topic is going to keep us going for some time.
So I have a monitoring confession. I once had a system that I plugged into a wall, make repeated calls and download data. So I had one of these things plugged in at the research lab. And one evening, I was making a change. I plugged it into the wrong socket, and some poor little old lady in Cardiff got repeated calls every 10 minutes for 24 hours before someone worked out what I'd done and switched off. So be careful with your observations.
You were the originator of the prank call.
Well, yeah, it was a robo-dialing prank call. I mean, it didn't mean
Even
to do it.
Even worse.
I didn't mean to do it.